minute, but I'll get out of here in a hurry.
Just a bit outside.
If anything travels that far, I'd have a damn stewardess on it, don't you think?
It's time for Powell at the Park.
One constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball.
Cubs, Sox, all your Chicago baseball news.
Dynamite drop in money.
Here's your host, Kevin Powell.
Play ball!
It is episode number 5 of the Powell at the Park podcast. I'm Kevin Powell. Appreciate you tuning in. Over a month already of this podcast. Hopefully you're enjoying it. I've gotten some pretty good feedback from it. I've been floating the idea of starting a podcast Gmail account. So if people want to email in, tell me how much they love it, how much they hate it, whatever you guys want. Just like a, kind of a place where you could send ideas, or maybe we could do sort of like a mailbox thing somewhere down the road, but stay tuned there. On today's episode, Tony Andracki, NBC Sports Chicago, he covers the Cubs. Kind of a weird start for the Cubs. Obviously, we're not overreacting. It's only been a week or so, but not an ideal start. We'll talk to Tony about that. And then I had a good conversation with White Sox radio analyst Darren Jackson. Great to talk to DJ. We talk about this White Sox rebuild, get his early impressions of what he's seen from the Sox so far. So Tony Andracki, Darren Jackson, the guests for this week's episode. And I like to start off every episode with just something that's kind of caught my eye or caught my ear over the past week. Last week I did about 15 minutes on ballpark food, which the only reaction I really got from people was, damn you, now I'm very hungry after hearing that. So I don't know if that went well or if it was a complete disaster. All I apparently just made a bunch of people hungry. So I've been trying to think of a name of like what I should call the opening segment. Couldn't really think of anything. But I think we're going to go with the rundown. It's kind of got the baseball tie to it. So we'll start every show now. And as I've said, this podcast is going to continue to build. We'll have different segments and things like that. But I do want to have certain things that are we use from episode to episode. You know, I've started basically every show with just sort of a hodgepodge of stuff. Things I saw from the past week. So we're going to go with the rundown. And at some point I'll have some fancy schmancy production piece to fire in here, and then we'll launch the segment. So this is the rundown. We'll start with this. And what caught my eye, caught my ear, the Braves organist, Matthew Kaminsky. Pretty outstanding troll job of Bryce Harper. Matthew Kaminsky plays the organ at SunTrust Park. Yeah, Bryce Harper, the Nationals were in Atlanta taking him on. Bryce Harper's walking to the plate, and Kaminsky plays this on the organ.
Number 34, Bryce Harper.
That's pretty good. That is pretty good from Kaminsky. A little go Cubs go as Bryce Harper walks up to the plate. Of course, Bryce Harper, a pending free agent at the end of this year. Hundreds of millions of dollars he's going to get. And the Cubby faithful, almost to a creepy status, troll Harper and basically look for any sort of clue or indication that Harper may be coming to to Chicago. But honestly, when you kind of add up everything that people have collected during Bryce Harper watch, Harper to the Cubs watch, and it is kind of apparent he wants to come to Chicago. Dog's name is Wrigley. He posted a picture on social media leaving Wrigley Field after the NLDS, one of the games. I think it was game four, I believe. And the picture said, man, until next time, I love this place. And it was a picture of the marquee at Wrigley. He's been spotted at Blackhawks games. He was wearing a Blackhawks t-shirt, a Bulls hat. Their wives are great friends. They've posted stuff on social media. Fans want it, and we are more than good with this idea. And then it's a picture of their wives together. Hashtag Harper to the Cubs. And then, of course, Harper and Bryant grew up in Vegas. They played together when they were kids. Peter Gammons reported in the past that Bryce Harper would really prefer to play for the Cubs. So, we'll see. I actually talked about this a little bit more at length about how serious the Cubs are about signing Harper. even if it does mean dishing out $400 million. Is it realistic for the Cubs to actually go get Bryce Harper? We dive into that, Tony and I do. So stay tuned there. That's the rundown. The organist, Matthew Kaminsky, for the Atlanta Braves, trolling Bryce Harper as he walked to the plate. And as I said, he also played New York, New York, because people just, there's a big fish free agent, of course, the New York team, you figure, is going to be involved in the conversation at least a little bit. So that's the rundown, but it's time for our first guest, Darren Jackson, the White Sox radio analyst. Of course, you can hear him on WGN now, all the White Sox games on WGN. Darren Jackson was kind enough to join me and had a conversation about the Sox rebuild and his initial thoughts of the Sox in 2018. All right, early impressions of the 2018 White Sox. What sticks out to you so far?
Well, you know, the theme all spring training, Kevin, was 27 outs. Get the 27 outs. And Ed and I have been discussing this first few games. I talked to Rick Renteria, and it's all about minimizing your mistakes. Defensively, you've got to try and go 27 straight outs with no flaws, and that's the focus. And I think I told him yesterday, I told Rick Renteria yesterday, I said, you know, I've never really focused on that because it was something new that I'd seen them doing this spring. And he said, no, this has been going on. I go, well, never around me in baseball, so it's new to me. And it makes me now take notice of every single time a guy fields a ball and the deep gap out and against the fence, turns around, throws it to the cutoff man. What exactly are their position? Are they perfectly lined up? These are all things that I've always known, but I take even more notice of it now. If the throw's a short hop, did he pick it? Because the focus all spring training was every throw should be perfect to the cutoff man, the secondary cutoff man shouldn't even come into play. You turn, you throw, communicate. So I'm paying attention to all these things. And so far, there's no way they've been close to doing that, but that's where they're going to create their growth. All of a sudden, they're going to know, all right, and they're taking accountability. That's what Rick told me. When they make a mistake, he starts to walk to them, and they go, I know, I did this, I did that. So it's making the players better, and that's the key. These guys have to keep getting better every day.
Well, that's the interesting part of it where, look, I don't think many of us are anticipating a postseason run or anything like that, but who knows? They could surprise. But there is an absolute serious interest from the fan base, from the baseball world, because of where they are with these core guys, your Tim Andersons, Moncada, Giolito. You can be bad and interesting or bad and uninteresting. So even if the Sox are losing, I think Sox fans are paying a much closer attention to all those 27 outs. Even if they are losing games, even if it's not a close game, I think there's reason to watch and pay close attention to the 2018 White Sox.
I think that's a great analogy, bad or interesting, bad or uninteresting. And that's the key for this team. They want to be interesting, and the talent is there with the core players. You also have some guys that already are just kind of honing and tweaking and doing their thing. They're veterans, like Avi Garcia can play. You know, he's just, it's a daily grind of tweaking and adjusting to whatever is going on that day. You also have Abreu and Wellington Castillo. These guys know what to do, but they're just making slight adjustments to their routines. The other guys are still learning day in and day out, but I think it will be interesting because we've got to see that growth. We can't keep repeating ourselves as broadcasters and coaching staffs and organizations saying, yeah, he made the same mistake time and time again, because that should get you a demotion. If you're not getting better on a regular basis at the big league level, then you have to go down and hone your skills at the minor league level again. So we're trying to avoid that. Watch these guys grow here at this level and be interesting.
Yeah, there's so much to dissect with the Sox now. I could talk to you for a whole hour, Darren, about certain players and this rebuild. And before we get into, I guess, some of the younger guys and get your thoughts on them, I look at a guy like Jose Abreu, and you look at the numbers he's put up the last 4 years, they're almost unprecedented around baseball, where he's just been so steady and consistent. Basically, 30 homers and 100 RBIs is what you're going to get from Jose Abreu. I'm curious as to what you think his long-term future with the Sox is, and do you think he does fit into this rebuild, and will he be around when the championship window does open up?
You know, I kind of look at him as the second coming of a Paul Konerko. So, yeah, I think you would want him around, especially in the direction where we have the talent with so many Latin players. He's your guy. He's a quiet leader. He's a professional. And when you watch him day in and day out, if you're a younger player, you're going, wow, this guy's perfectionist. He doesn't waste his time out here. He puts the max effort into all of his practice. His focus is high every game. Even if he's swinging at bad pitches, that's just because he's off. But his approach, his thought process is all good. I would love to see him around when this team is finally in a position to try and compete for the division and then go to the postseason and try and win a World Series. But, you know, that's business. That's the hard part for any of us to try and predict. That's, you know, we've already seen the best of the best of the White Sox move out of here and get the returns for the future. But I personally would love to see Jose here his whole career. He's the kind of guy that you like having around, simple as that, in more ways than one. And I'll tell you what, he's a manager's best friend, too, because he's on board with whatever the manager's trying to sell. If he says, we need to do this, we need to do that, he's going to shake his head, I'm on board, let's go do it. So, you know, he's one of those guys, you said, you could talk about him all you want, but for me, he sticks around.
Yeah, you mentioned the way he leads with some of the younger guys and the Latin players, and particularly Yoan Moncada, fellow Cuban. So let's go from the veteran to a younger guy in Moncada. I've had this conversation with a few people about Moncada, and I've said that I have no reservations that he's going to be a great baseball player. I'm just not sure yet what sort of player he's going to be. He's leading off now, but is he a middle-of-the-order guy who's going to hit you 30 home runs? How do you project Moncada for the long term in his career?
Hey, look, in a perfect world, he stays in the leadoff spot for the next 15 years for the White Sox because he's got the potential, I mean, Hall of Fame potential. It's not, and that's not stretching it at all because you don't have many five-tool guys that come around, and he's that. He has power from the left side, the right side, speed. He's got a great arm. He's just a player that when you acquire him, you have to be patient and let him get his repetitions. He's got to get the ground balls. He's got to get the swings. He's got to learn the pitchers. I just see him being the guy that, you know, Roberto Alomar type player, maybe not with the instincts yet that Roberto had at a young age, but the similar type player with way more power than Robbie had. But I watch him take batting practice. His approach is good from the first time that I saw him take batting practice. Same thing with Jose Abreu. He had the best approach in batting practice, which he takes into the game. And when you see how a guy practices, that's what you need to see. What does he do when he practices? Is he wasting his time? Is he all of a sudden trying to just hit home runs? He never gets outside of being a professional in his practice, which is a key to let you know that he's taking this serious. And he doesn't want to waste his time. He wants to be as quick as he can at the big league level, learning and try and be a star for this team as soon as possible.
Well, one of the guys he's built a relationship with, when I was on spring training, it was these two were basically arm in arm the entire time, and Tim Anderson. Moncada and Anderson seem to really have built a bond. They seem to be having fun together. Tim Anderson, Darren, you know what he went through last year. He lost his best friend who was gunned down in a parking lot back in Alabama. He was quiet. He was reserved. You could tell he was down last year. And then this spring, he's like a whole new guy. I think he's at peace. He's, you know, he seems upbeat and happy. Incredible amount of talent there. You know, I was anticipating a huge season from Tim Anderson this year. Curious as to what you've seen from TA so far. And do you agree that you do see big things for him this season and even long term?
Well, his raw natural ability is astounding as an athlete. So he's fun to watch just because of his athleticism, that's for sure. But you're going to still see some hiccups. He made an error last night, got a little quick, a little rushed, and I just talked to him the other day about does he have the ability to slow things down yet? And by that, it's when you get to the big leagues at first, you think you got to just be fast. You got to get to the ball fast. You got to swing, go get the ball out in front of home plate quickly. It's the opposite of that. You got to let the ball come to you defensively, be under control and calm. And he's not at that stage yet, but he said he's there. That's something he's working on. He understands what it means. Is everything slowing down for you right now? He and I had a conversation about it. He feels confident that he's getting there, but we have to see it on the field. So I think Tim's just a raw talent that just needs to slow down a little bit. He's going to hit. He's going to hit for power. He's going to drive the ball. He's showing off his speed with a couple of stolen bases in last night's game. I'm a big Tim Anderson fan, but at the same time, I know that he's still going to make some mistakes because his natural instinct, especially defensively, is to be in a bit of a hurry. So he's forcing himself to slow things down. He's just not like Omar Vizquel at shortstop where everything's just smooth and easy. It's going to look like he's having trouble with some balls that are routine. And then he's going to show more range than any other shortstop in baseball and make a highlight play. You're going to go, are you kidding me? Yeah. So that's what makes him really fun to watch, because honestly, you don't know what you're going to get, but it's going to probably be something that excites you.
So do you think he can be an everyday shortstop for the next 5-10 years, or would potentially moving him to the outfield or something like that be in the picture? Do you see him as the White Sox shortstop of the future?
I haven't said that to myself yet. I haven't just said Tim Anderson's going to be here 5 years from now at shortstop. I also haven't said that he's not going to be. I'm kind of laying back in the wings right now because of the 28 errors he made last year. I need him to show me he can, as we were just discussing, slow down on the routine plays. And when I start seeing that and seeing all these, see him reach out in front and field some ground balls with ease rather than kind of stab at him at the last second, and it looks like it's not the most comfortable thing, and everybody can see that, then I'll say, oh yeah, he's there. He can handle this. He doesn't feel like he has to hurry, and you cannot hurry at the position of shortstop. You've got to know what you're doing. Your instincts have to be in there, and I just don't see yet that he's so instinctual at shortstop that it's his natural position. I just know he's a great athlete, and he can play the position, and he could probably be there 10 years from now, but that's a matter of if a club says, we're not worried about him making a miscue here and there.
Mm-hmm. Moving on to another guy who's off to a pretty good start, to say the least. The Sox had 6 homers in the opener. Half of those were off the bat of Matt Davidson. Your thoughts on Matt Davidson, and do you think he can be, I know I keep asking you about long-term for the Sox, but that's kind of where we are with this team, is kind of projecting moving forward and sorting through different players and seeing where they fit into the puzzle. Does Matt Davidson move the needle for you? Can you see him long-term as a DH and kind of a guy that you rotate in and out at third base or even first base?
Well, with the term long-term anyway nowadays for me, guys are just moving parts in this business now. So I don't see Matt necessarily as being here long-term, but I do see him playing the big leagues quite a long time because his power is there. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's a difficult job to try and establish yourself as a DH. And so far, first couple of games, he was able to handle that. I think the hardest transition for a younger player is to give up a defensive position and just sit there in the dugout, watch the game, then go up and hit. Veterans can handle it better than young players. It's not the easiest thing to do when you feel you can help defensively when you're not swinging the bat well. So I'm kind of sitting here now waiting to see how he handles this new full-time role as DH. He's going to have to get on the field and feel like he's part of things when he's not swinging the bat well. He's going to hit home runs. He's as big and strong as anybody we have. Home runs to right, center, left is not a problem for him. How often is he going to make contact is a big key. He's going to strike out. Last night he had a tough night. I don't think you agree with the strike zone of the home plate umpire. Struck out 3 times, a couple times looking. So, you know, there are those games like that. But we have to kind of keep an eye on Matt and just make sure that he doesn't fall into a long slump where he's not making solid contact. Because when you see that, as a manager, you have to go, okay, how do we make him better? Should we get him out on the field for a few games defensively so he can clear his mind, feel like he's doing something positive? I mean, these are all the way and balance and keeping an individual where he's feeling like he's contributing. But as a DH, the only way you contribute is by swinging that stick, and it's not that easy for young players.
Let's move to the pitchers quickly. Reynaldo Lopez, Lucas Giolito, Carson Falmer. Those are the 3 Sox fans are most excited about. They matter. They matter for the long term. It's a big year for all of them. I guess early impressions from you on Giolito and Lopez, who have already made one start each.
Oh, yes. Oh, man. I think they both were outstanding, to be honest with you, because Giolito, what a battle. I mean, he was almost 50-50 balls to strikes. If he threw 100 pitches, 50 were balls, 50 were strikes. And he still kept the team in the game. That shows me something. When you're not locked in as a pitcher, and a young pitcher like Lucas, and you still have the ability to keep your team in the game, that's impressive. I like those kind of outings from young players because I think that teaches you about their character and their competitiveness, and he's definitely a competitive guy. I honestly think he's going to be just fine. We saw Reynaldo Lopez. He's overpowering. I mean, last year when I saw him in spring training going into 2017 season, I was going, this guy needs to be on the team right now, today, when I saw him in spring training. Not my thought on him hasn't changed since. He's going to be somebody that just flat out dominates. Now, he's just like any other great starter. He's going to have a bad outing here and there, but I expect him, as long as he is around the plate, he's going to pile up some strikeouts and he's going to blow people away. He's just got too good of an arm not to be a future star on the staff.
Everybody wants to know when Eloy Jimenez and Michael Kopech will get the call up to the majors. Of course, Jimenez, a pec injury, so we'll see how that affects his timeline. I guess if you could just guess, Darren, because everybody wants to know when these two will be brought up, and Rick Hahn's really hasn't given an answer. He says they can force the issue. We'll see, we'll see, we'll see. If you had a guess, Darren, when would you say those guys will be up on the big league club?
Oh, so you go to Rick Hahn, now you want me to figure it out.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Look, I'm going with what I saw last year when it came to letting the top prospects spend some time down in the minor leagues and still polish their skills. Kopech, he's probably going to go down to minor leagues, and he's going to dominate. Got a really good chance later this year to get called up to the big leagues because of his dominance. Jimenez, I think he stays a whole year down in the minor leagues, maybe a September-type call-up. But I think you have to – I do believe, especially when it comes to hitters, you have to let them get their at-bats. You have to let them figure out how do you adjust to sliders when that's all they're throwing to you. How do you take a pitch away from these guys? And you learn that by getting a certain amount of at-bats throughout your minor league career. If you rush guys, they get to the big leagues. Big league pitchers can pick you apart, make you feel bad about yourself. So you don't want that to happen to Jimenez, no matter how great his raw skill is and talent. Let him get his repetition. Let him get his at-bats. Give him the whole year down there. If he gets called up and does well, okay, if there's a spot up here in the big leagues, he makes the team next year. But you know already that the White Sox are not in a rush, no matter what anybody thinks or tries to say about we got to win now. These guys got a long-term plan of when these younger players they think should be ready to go. Now, even with that being said, if these guys go down and they struggle, and we don't think that's going to be the case, that adds to their time down there still getting polished. We're anticipating these guys doing well, but even the best of the best players have something go wrong, and they just have tough years. Hopefully, that's not the case for either of those two.
Those are the top two prospects. Before I let you go, DJ, curious as to, you know, I spent a couple weeks out there at spring training and keeping an eye on some of these prospects, and the guy who stood out to me was Dylan Cease in terms of, you know, maybe a guy not everybody's talking about a whole lot. I mean, he gets some exposure and things like that, but guys like Kopech and Jimenez are getting the bulk of the attention. Is there somebody you saw in the spring that's in the Sox farm system that maybe stood out to you or isn't getting enough headlines and not talked about enough?
Well, I'm going to just say two quick names, but then I'm going to talk about another guy. Luis Robert. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable talent. I couldn't believe what I saw from him. And Basabe, I couldn't believe what I saw from him. These guys really impressed, looked like they did not, you know, they didn't stand out as minor leaguers in big league camps. So that was really impressive. But a guy that I'm keeping an eye out on is Alec Hansen. Mm-hmm. He's a guy that I look at and I go, huh, I don't know. I think he's going to surprise some people. I think he's a guy that we can talk about all the prospects in the world, the big names, the ones we all know, the hype up. But he's a guy that might just creep right in. You're talking about a game being started tomorrow, and you're going to be talking about Hansen standing on the mound. He's my sleeper, I think, that's going to kind of get here a little quicker than most people are talking about.
He's Darren Jackson. You can hear him on the radio call at WGN this entire season. DJ and Ed Farmer on the White Sox call will be in Toronto for the finale tonight. Is that right? Yeah, tonight. And then home opener Thursday.
Correct.
Looking forward to that. Darren, really appreciate your time, and looking forward to seeing you out of the park this season.
All right, Kevin. Thank you for the time.
You're the best. See you soon. Thanks, Darren.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you to Darren Jackson for joining me. Appreciate him coming on the show. You can hear DJ on every White Sox radio call, him and Ed Farmer. Thanks to Darren Jackson. Some great stuff there. All right, we go from White Sox talk to Cubs talk, per usual. Always White Sox stuff and Cubs stuff on the podcast. So DJ on the Sox. Also had a chance to talk to my buddy Tony Andracki, a fellow Illinois State Redbird. Tony's with NBC Sports Chicago, and we talked about the Cubs' start to the season. We now talk to Tony Andracki from NBC Sports Chicago. He covers the Cubs for NBC Sports Chicago, and he does it well. More importantly, he's an Illinois State Redbird, a fellow Redbird. So anytime I can get a Redbird on the podcast, I'm gonna go with that route, Tony.
Yeah, I hear you, man. I wish it was Illinois State, maybe even over Loyola in the NCAA tournament here. But, you know, we'll see him eventually.
It's happy for Loyola, but I do credit Illinois State for kind of propelling them into the tournament after they lost in the MVC tournament. I feel like it was Illinois State does deserve some credit there.
Oh, absolutely. I've been saying the same thing, bragging about it.
All right, let's talk some baseball, Tony. You cover the Cubs closely. It's only been five games so far. We're not going to go over reaction after, you know, one or two series of baseball. But I guess what stood out for you so far, whether it's a positive or negative? What's the one thing when you look back on the first five games and what sticks out to you?
Well, I mean, it seems crazy that it is only five games. You know, we've had rain out and, you know, a four-game series and then a one-game series and a 17-inning game and a 10-inning game. So it's been a heck of a roller coaster so far for the Cubs in only five games. But what's really stood out to me is not the offense. Everything, you know, ebbs and flows in baseball. But it's been the starting rotation. I mean, everybody thought that this pitching staff was going to be one of the best in baseball, and adding Darvish to what already had Lester, Hendricks, Quintana, Chatwood, you know, they were thinking they were going to be able to take that next step forward and be in the 2016 range. And they've gotten off to a poor start. Only two quality starts, one time through the rotation. You know, I mean, right now, Justin Wilson has more outs than John Lester, which is really weird to think. If you would have told a Cubs fan that at the end of 2017, they would have, you know, about like crap their pants, I would say. But it's really been a weird start for the rotation, and that stood out to me more than anything.
Yeah, that's kind of how I described the first series of Miami. Things were just kind of weird and off and not exactly what we were anticipating. I'm looking at Tony Andracki 23 on the Twitter, and you posted this. Through five games, the Cubs bullpen has gotten more outs, 78, than the starting rotation, 77.
Yeah, see, exactly. And I mean, I know a lot of that is based off of a 17-inning game when actually Kyle Hendricks delivered a quality start in that one, you know, gave up a run in six innings. So, Eddie Butler is the team leader in innings right now and outs with seven. It's crazy to think that, and they all came in that one performance in extra innings. But, yeah, I mean, it's just been unreal so far. And, you know, nobody's prepared for that, from Joe Maddon to Theo Epstein to any of the players. It's just been wacky.
Yeah, weird start. And honestly, like I said, we're not going to overreact over five games. But before the season, I did say one of the keys was for the Cubs to start off strong. We saw last year, remember, there was all the festivities because of the World Series victory. It seemed like for the first month there was something commemorating the victory. And they kind of got off to a slow start out of the gate last year, and it honestly, like, that mattered. Like, at the end of this season, they had some big-time series against Milwaukee and St. Louis that actually mattered, and I think that actually factored into the postseason. When you saw a bullpen that was pretty taxed heading into the playoffs, and then especially after that five-game set with the Nationals, you know, the slow start basically turned into a tighter divisional race down the stretch for the Cubs last year, and I think that did kind of affect them a little bit in the postseason. So obviously not an ideal start here.
I agree with you 100%. I mean, I think the Cubs agree with you. They have been saying, you know, all offseason that they admitted the bullpen was tired and they were taxed because they were used so much, and especially used, you know, in all these tight and close games. And that does matter when you're out there in a one-run game as compared to a six- or seven-run game. It matters. And it puts more stress on your arms, and it's more mentally taxing. And so the fact that they got off to such a slow start affected the bullpen, but they relied on the bullpen a lot more last year than they wanted to, and they wanted to get away from that. And then here we are in the first five games of the regular season of the 2018 season, and we're talking about how the bullpen's got more outs than the starting rotation. So, you know, it's not the way that they wanted to start it, but it's been a necessity because of those extra inning games and the short starts by the rotation. But yeah, moving forward, they definitely need to get some rest and get off to a hotter start overall. You know, they can't be two games under 500 going to the All-Star break again.
Yeah, 26 innings from the bullpen already. Let's move to the offensive side of things. Ian Happ, 10 strikeouts in his first 15 at-bats in the leadoff spot. Your thoughts on Happ batting leadoff? Are you concerned about the high strikeout rate? And, basically, going into the season, the leadoff spot, everyone wants that to name, you know, to anoint somebody as the leadoff man, but the fact of the matter is Joe Maddon's probably just going to continue to play the matchups, and he's going to put Almora or Happ, depending on who the pitcher is on the mound. Ben Zobrist will get into the mix. I guess just your thoughts on Happ and his high strikeout rate so far through the first five games.
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of doing too much. That's what Maddon has talked about anyways, not necessarily just with Happ, but Javi Baez as well. And you know what? Wilson Contreras, too. He's hitting .400, and his numbers aren't as bad as Javi or Happ's are, but Contreras also, I think he has like 8 strikeouts to 1 walk right now through 5 games, and actually 4 games because he didn't even play at all on Sunday, and those are startling numbers. I mean, the Cubs are just striking out a lot more than they want to be right now. And, you know, in general, the high number of strikeouts, you got to keep in mind, they did play a 17-inning game and followed by a 10-inning game the next day. So they do have one extra game. They have like 6 games worth of at-bats right. And innings. So they're only averaging about 10 strikeouts per 9 innings, which isn't overall awful. But definitely, I mean, Happ is a major issue. His contact, you know, he had that one great pitch, great swing on the first pitch. And then since then has been a major problem. And moving forward, I mean, he has to put the bat on the ball. He has to figure out his contact issues. Even if he's drawing walks or hitting homers, he still can't be striking out anywhere near the rate that he is now, or even half of this, if he's going to be in a leadoff spot.
Give me something positive that stood out to you through the first five games.
Well, the bullpen. I mean, we've talked about it a lot, and they were really good to start last year, but they were definitely like public enemy number one in the Cubs fandom. You know, everybody was criticizing the bullpen or Hector Rondon or Maddon's usage of the bullpen last year, and especially going into the postseason. And now this year, they've been fantastic. They've given up 2 earned runs in like you said, 26 innings, and one of those earned runs was, you know, from Eddie Butler, as he gave up a couple base runners right before he departed, and Brandon Morrow came in and threw 2 pitches, and unfortunately that was it for him and the Cubs. But I mean, it's incredible. Their ERA is .69 right now, and they have been asked to do a lot. Mike Montgomery's never worked 3 straight days in his big league career, and just did it in the first 3 games of the season. So all of these guys have been really, really impressive so far. So that's definitely a positive. And the other one is they're all healthy. So far, nobody's hurt. Nobody's on the disabled list. You know, they've already made it. They're ahead of the game in 2016, because at this point, 2 years ago, Kyle Schwarber was already out for the year with his knee injury. So it's kind of 2016 with the expectations, but they're ahead of the game in 2016 in the health department.
Yeah, it's funny. Back to the point where you and I were describing this start as weird. Going into the year, everyone's like, well, the offense will be fine. Look at that lineup. It's stacked. Everyone was like, okay, the starting five is pretty damn good. It's one of the best in baseball, probably a top 3 rotation in all of baseball. And the question marks were, like you said, the bullpen. And the bullpen has basically saved the day for them. It's baseball for you,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, it's been the hero so far, yeah.
Yeah. Your thoughts on the Braves organist trolling Bryce Harper. If anybody missed this, apparently the Braves organist kind of does zany stuff like this a lot. But anyways, Bryce Harper was walking to the plate, and the organist decided to play Go Cubs Go on the organ. Are you a Bryce Harper Cubs truther, one of those people that looks for, like, that stalks his social media accounts and looks for any clue that he may be indicating he's coming to Chicago?
No, not in that regard. Definitely, I think there are a lot of reasons for optimism for Cubs fans in terms of Bryce Harper coming here. You know that the Cubs are going to be interested, because it was very important to Theo Epstein, and he talked at winter meetings about his plans for next year and beyond. He used that kind of mysterious word, like plans. And, I mean, that could mean anything, but it also could mean Bryce Harper or Manny Machado or whatever, you know, Josh Donaldson. Who knows this, you know, Clayton Kershaw, even if he opts out of his contract. This is a huge free agent class coming up, but Bryce Harper is a really great fit. I mean, imagine a lineup like this right now that you have Bryce Harper, Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, and you talk about strikeout issues. Harper went like 26 at-bats or plate appearances into this season before he even struck out for the first time. So this guy is incredible and keeps getting better. I'm not a truther per se, but I thought this story in Atlanta was hilarious. Mm-hmm. The Braves organist then played like a Yankee song.
Yeah, New York he played.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, job trolling.
If it is a legitimately out there, what has to happen? Do they have to find a way to move Hayward somehow, or do Is it realistic, or are they just going to find a way to dish out $300-400 million without actually subtracting anybody from their payroll?
You know what? They can do that. There's no salary cap. It would be crazy to think that, but you know, if they've been planning, this would be two straight years, assuming they don't make, you know, trade for some exorbitant salary this year. They have about, I think, $7 million to play with to come under that threshold again, the luxury tax. Mm-hmm. Assuming they don't go over, this is two straight years, so the penalties wouldn't even impact them until 2020 if they signed Bryce Harper this winter or gave out a $400 million contract. So even with Jason Hayward, they can do it. It's just a matter of whether Ricketts and the Cubs want to put that out there. But, I mean, they're turning all of Wrigleyville, like the hotel's about to open, they're turning this into a prime spot for around, you know, the holidays, around the winter, everything that's going on. This place is, Wrigleyville is going to be a place to be all throughout the year, and they're just going to be printing money. They have to be, like, throughout this season, especially if they win another World Series.
And that TV deal that's coming.
Exactly,
deal.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
It, you know, it's
the cash cow for sure.
Money.
Yeah, yeah. That's interesting.
And either way, I mean, they can move Hayward, too. He's not going to opt out. But if they did move Hayward, we're talking about even more of a possibility for Harper.
Bryce Harper Watch will continue throughout the entire season. So we'll keep you guys posted. He's Tony Andracki. Read his stuff at NBCSportsChicago.com. Follow him on Twitter at TonyAndracki23. Did I get that right?
Yes, you did.
Anything you want to plug? Anything that you've that people should be looking for to read at the website?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this bullpen talk, I wrote it up, and how Madden's planning on keeping them fresh for August and September. That's up right now on NBCSportsChicago.com.
Don't you guys have your own podcast, too, at the website?
We do, yeah, Cubs Talk podcast.
Cubs Talk.
Kelly Kroll and I recorded one down in Miami this weekend.
Cool. All right, man. Well, I appreciate you jumping on. He's Tony Andracki. Read his stuff. Follow him on Twitter, all that good stuff. I'll be seeing you out at Wrigley soon, hopefully this home opener gets in on Monday, but rain and snow in the forecast, so we'll see. But I'm sure I'll run into you soon, Tony. Thanks again for joining me. Appreciate it.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
That'll do it for episode 5 of the Powell at the Park podcast. I'm Kevin Powell. Appreciate you tuning in. Please subscribe on iTunes. Subscribe, review, rate it. Google Play, you can listen, or WGNRadio.com. Appreciate you tuning in. Thanks to Tony Andracki from NBC Sports Chicago. Read his stuff on their website, NBCSportsChicago.com. Thanks to Darren Jackson. Good White Sox conversation with DJ. You can hear him on every Sox call on WGN Radio, him and Farmio. And follow me on Twitter, at KPowell720. Plenty of more baseball talk coming as the season rolls on. Hopefully it gets warmer at some point and actually starts feeling like baseball season. But I'm just so pumped baseball's back. Thanks again for tuning in. Kevin Powell. Subscribe on iTunes. Review it. Rate it. Do it. Have a great day. Thanks for listening.